Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of the Future Sox Podcast. My name is Ian Eskridge. I am joined this evening by Mr. James Fox. How are you doing, James?
Hello, sir. I'm doing better than like a lot of the guys on the White Sox team, I feel like. My goodness gracious.
They are awful.
I mean, they're getting paid a lot more than me, so maybe not. Like, I could do that for whatever they're making, but...
Yeah, 2-13. Who saw this coming? I did. it's just an awful watch every single day. And, you know, like the thing was last year, it was a terrible watch, but for a different reason. So I'm not sure whether this is better or worse because I had zero expectations and still I find myself feeling let down.
Yeah, I mean, it's just bad because it's like boring and stupid, right? Like, if they had like a bunch of young kids that we thought like, hey, maybe these guys could be something and no bullpen, right? And you're scoring 7 or 8 runs and losing 10-7. Okay, like that's fine. But this is awful because they never score. We know exactly what's going to happen like every day, right? Like, so yeah, it's brutal. I mean, look, there's nothing worse than watching a team that can't hit at all. Like, it's just the worst thing. And I know, like, people say, you know, like, when you have a bad bullpen and you're trying to contend, right? Like, it's really frustrating. Like, all of a sudden you're losing in the 8th and 9th. But when you can't score at all, it's just awful.
It's terrible. And the thing is that they haven't been pitching most of the time either, especially against the Reds. The Reds have just been, you know, they brought out their whooping stick this weekend. And that was really ugly. But we did get some interesting news. Nestrini's supposed to be making a start coming up here against the Royals. So that's interesting. Does it tip the scales? Probably not. Probably still unwatchable. But at least we can watch to see how he handles things.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, look, the Royals are fine. Like, people think the Royals are good. Like, they're fine, I guess. But yeah, I mean, it's. I'm not really that worried about some of this starting pitching. I mean, you're going to see Nestrini. Like, you have two vets, obviously, and Clevinger and Keller will probably see them too. But I mean, other than that, like, you know, Jonathan Cannon is the closest, like, because he's at AAA. But like, there's a bunch of pitchers on the 40-man from Birmingham too. Like, we're going to see a lot of pitchers. Like, Nestrini gets the first crack. You know, hopefully he's good and he stay. Like, I don't see any reason to not start Nestrini every 5th day or whatever. And I know, like, with a young guy, like, maybe you give him extra rest here, there, whatever. He should be in the rotation. Just start him every whatever, like every turn through. He should get a chance.
So also some new news coming out here within the last hour. The White Sox are apparently reopening conversations with Tommy Pham, and supposedly it's a minor league deal. So, yeah.
So before we got on, we kind of talked about this and we were both like, huh? But the one thing I'll say is, like, I don't think there are any bad minor league deals. So it's fine. Like, whatever. Like, he'll, you know, I don't know. Like, he hits right-handed. I don't know. The one good thing about Tommy Pham is he's like really like honest and like outgoing and expresses himself. So maybe we'll, you know, hear some stuff from Tommy Pham, or he'll kill the manager. So that, you know, that's a, you know, second part of this. Just don't play fantasy football with him.
Exactly. I mean, at least in AAA, so Brett Phillips hit a grand slam last night. Rafael Ortega has been hitting home runs for the Knights as well. So add him to the mix with Colas and Peyton and Deloach, and how many outfielders do you need? Like, that's the thing that I'm kind of going, well, it might be a minor league deal, but if it's a minor league deal, who's going away? Probably Peyton or Phillips.
I don't know. I mean, he hits right-handed. Like, they don't have Grossman there anymore, right? So who cares, right? I mean, is there a chance somebody could have got like a Korean deal or something? Like, you know, that's always possible, I guess. But like, all those guys hit lefty. But I mean, like, Colas and Deloach should be the priority in Charlotte anyway, right? It should be those two guys playing. And look, it's not like, you know, like, Grossman went to Charlotte and pumped a couple of homers, and then they're like, you know what, he's ready, call him up. Like, it would be the same, I'm guessing, with Tommy Pham. Like, if he gets to play in Charlotte and does that, like, they'll just be like, okay, you can come up too. And my guess is he's like a replacement for Pilar, possibly. Whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, for sure that could happen. Or they could, you know, just decide quickly that, hey, Robbie Grossman's not it. And part of the reason that I would say that that's a possibility is because if you watch his defense over the last couple of days, because they've been starting him, you know, his defense, he dropped a critical fly ball today. Yesterday he bounced in two relay throws that caused problems at third base and shortstop. I mean, it's bad, you know, and that was always the knock on him. It was the ding. And, you know, maybe they want somebody that's a little bit more competent on defense. Who knows, you know?
How about, like, you know, Andrew Vaughn has three minor league options.
Yeah.
I mean,
how soon?
Like, how can you, I just, like, you're getting nothing. You're getting worse than nothing. Like, it's a 42 WRC plus at first base. I mean, you could play Sheets and Grossman at first. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if they'd even consider that, but I don't know, man. Like, it's not good.
Since you're bringing that up here, I'm just going to go ahead and bring something up here real quick. Something that's very important.
Yeah. Clutch the Andrews, not particularly good. Either of them. Oh, you're bringing, I know what you're bringing up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I'm bringing up. Oh, and for sure. Everybody needs to see it. With old Andrew Vaughn struggling.
Yeah. I just, like, I want to see this dude play in Charlotte.
Yeah. He hit that about 485 feet, probably.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. And, you know, it's only his second home run, I think, of the season. But, you know, after watching Andrew Vaughn just completely struggle and not hit the ball with any authority at all, like, what do we have to lose? I mean, what is clear right now is that Andrew Vaughn's just not – he's not what we thought he was.
No.
Unfortunately.
No, he's done nothing.
Yeah. Ugly. The reason why we are here tonight is to talk about the draft pools – for the 2024 draft and go through some of the things in the 2024 draft. I don't really want to talk too much about the White Sox, but the White Sox draft, that I'm interested in a lot more, because hopefully we'll be winning more with this draft than this baseball team. Where would you so you have the numbers for what the White Sox are going to have to spend in this year's draft?
Yeah, so they have the sixth biggest pool, which isn't really that crazy because they have the fifth overall pick, and then, you know, they traded for the extra pick from Seattle. You know, generally the teams that have the biggest bonus pools are the teams that pick at the top of the draft, but, like, if you pick at the top of the draft and you're a small market club that has, like, extra picks, like, you have a ton of money to spend. Like, Cleveland comes in with the most, like, easily. Like, they have over $18 million to spend. Like, they can spend close to $19 million on the draft if they want. They have an extra pick, which is helpful to them. I mean, even a team like the Diamondbacks, I believe, like, they have, like, the 10th largest pool, and they pick late in the round, right? They pick 29th. And they have the 10th largest bonus pool because they get a PPI selection for Corbin Carroll winning Rookie of the Year, which is, like, at 30 or 31 or something. And then they get a selection for being a small market club, like, at, like, 37, something like that. So, you know, they have, like, they got a bunch of money to spend. So, yeah. So just, like, for the White Sox, their official amount is $14,593,300. You can spend 5% over. Okay. And a lot of times I get they don't do that, they're cheap, whatever. So one place where they're actually not cheap is in the draft. Like, they spend up to that 5% pretty much every year. They've done it the last 3 years with Mike Shirley. That gives them an extra 730K-ish to play with. So look, it's, if I tell you like their draft, they can spend $15.3 million. That's a pretty good number. It's really $15,322,000. So $15.3 million's good without, then you don't get penalized for it. You pay a 75% overage, you know, on the 5%, but like, it's fine. They've been doing that. That's like not that big a deal. Their pick at number five is worth $7,763,700. So look, like they could go over slot and get a guy for $8 million. You could get a guy for $7 million and pocket the 700 and use it later. So look, we'll talk about all this in depth like as we get closer. That's like not a big deal, but you know, their second pick is over $2 million, their third pick is, you know, $1.2 million. So they got plenty to spend. I mean, this is the first time in a while where they're, you know, you're not really necessarily robbing Peter to pay Paul, where you're punting on 7, 8, 9, 10 to go over early. You could legitimately like save early and, you know. I think they've done a pretty good job like the last couple years. So this is, you know, pretty good, I think. So we haven't even gotten into the players. So we're kind of a while to go still. They can't trade draft money. They can trade international bonus pool space, but I'm pretty sure they spent all their international money. So
they had $1 million left last time I looked. Do you think that they've, they usually do pick up some guys late. So yeah, you think that that's probably what happened?
Well, so they have a bunch of small signings. I mean, they might have some money. I mean, they traded $1.2 million, I think, for Bautista and Martinez. They don't have that much left. They might have $600,000-$700K left. But they have a full class. I'll be writing about their class because those guys are all going to the DSL. That season starts in June, so I'll write that preview and kind of talk about some of those guys. But yeah, so the draft is a little bit different. Like the only thing that you can trade in the draft is like if you have those competitive balance picks after rounds 1 and 2. Seattle had one after the second. They traded that in the deal for Gregory Santos. If the White Sox could get another one somehow, that would be tremendous. I just don't know how they would because it's generally small market clubs, like, and there's no reason for those guys to trade those picks for somebody, you know, usually.
Yeah. On the positive side, from that deal, Prelander Baroa has had a couple of good outings in a row. So it looks like he's figured things out in Charlotte. So that's nice. And also Deloach has been hitting a little bit as well. So let's see here. We had a question here, and this is very draft specific, but I'm going to go ahead and bring this up.
Yeah.
Clutch asks, so speaking of Vaughn, how are we feeling about Kurtz and Jack Caglione?
I know how you feel. You can take this one because we agree, I think so.
Well, I mean, it's just that it's generally kind of one of those things when you have one of those really high draft picks that you don't spend it on a first baseman because you can get a first baseman a little bit farther down that has power. That said,
like in the 10th round for 30K.
Yeah. Jack Caglione looks like, I mean, the dude's bat speed is ridiculous. I know you have an issue with him because he's a two-way player.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's one guy on the planet that can do that. Look, if you're taking Jack Caglione for his bat and you think he can play an outfield corner, I can live with that. But if he's first base only, like, I don't care how good he is. Five is too high. Like, it just is. Like, especially in this class where, like, you know, like we can get into it a little bit, like Charlie Condon, he's probably going to go out as a third baseman, but he's definitely a left or right fielder and he's going to friggin' mash, right? There's two middle infielders, Weatherholt and Bazana. I don't think the White Sox want to take those guys from what I've heard, but I mean, look, those guys are in the mix up there. You know, Braden Montgomery, Texas A&M is a right field power hitter. You got Caglione. Oh, and then the two, like, you know, high level starting pitchers. I don't think there's necessarily a scenario to me where Cags and Kurtz are like my best player at five. I can understand for Kags, but for Kurtz, I think Kurtz is like, you know, you take him eighth or ninth, you know, like if you just, and you have to take a first baseman, and there's all sorts of Wake Forest questions that I know you have, Ian, that I agree with. I mean, he just, you know, like he might be good, but like, I just like Gavin Sheets was a power hitter at Wake Forest too. So
only for 1 year though.
Yeah.
Only for 1 year. Like Kurtz is a lot more, the power is more in the bat. You know, he's a guy that you look at as a prototypical power hitter, as opposed to Sheets that was more a bat to ball guy that hit 20 home runs, but playing at Wake Forest. Like, I don't think Kurtz is that. I think Kurtz actually is a power hitter. But like you said, I do have those questions because the park factor at Wake Forest is ridiculous. And that's the issue that I have. So it's not that I don't like him.
Just. Right. And so my philosophy for this draft is way different. Like, you know, if people are listening to this show, like, I haven't said this in the past, right? Like, I've always preferred taking bats, like, higher. I like higher upside prep guys. The prep class isn't great, okay? And I know that the White Sox are super high on, you know, one of the guys that we've been talking about all year, Connor Griffin in Mississippi. He's probably the best high school player in the class. There's another guy, Bryce Rayner, out of Harvard Westlake in California. That's where Ethan Katz coached. You know, that's where Lucas Giolito went, powerhouse in California. I think he's going to be like in the top 10 to 15, like come draft time. So like the White Sox really like him too. The thing is, if they go prep at five, like the strategy is pretty apparent. It's going to be pretty far under slot. And then you try to get players throughout, which look, I don't hate. I've notoriously been a fan of, but what I will say right now is like, as of today, Hagen Smith and Chase Burns, like if either of those guys are on the board, I don't know how the White Sox don't take them just with like the situation that they're in. I've always been bats over arms. I've said that, but like you have an owner that is never going to pay for pitching. These guys could be top of the rotation starters really soon. These are the type of guys who like don't go to the minors for very long. That would be my plan. I would do that if either guy is on the board, and you just, you know, you play around with the rest of your draft however you want to. So that's, you know, kind of how I see it right now.
So I just wanted to bring up one thing really quick. If you have not watched or listened to our podcast / stream with Jim Callis, he suggested something, especially pertaining to the White Sox draft position this year. He suggested a solution to the issue with the lottery system, where if you actually go down below the percentages in your pick in the draft, it wouldn't count as a win. So you wouldn't be capped off with the 10th or below pick in the draft. And I thought that was phenomenal and a great idea. And I've seen it one other place since then. It seems like a great idea. That said, speaking of Hagen Smith and Chase Burns, we do have video that I pulled for today. And I'm just going to go ahead and let you freestyle here, James. I got Hagen Smith video coming up here.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like NC State Carlos Rodon. Like, he's absolutely filthy. I know some people are a little bit afraid of the arm action. We've kind of talked about this like on the show a little bit, even like last week when we talked about the Tommy Johns. I don't think we know, guys. Like, I think, you know, like whatever. Like, I hear that all the time. Like, oh, look at his arm. He's going to get hurt. Like, Hagen Smith had Tommy John in high school, I think, or as a freshman. He's already had it. I know that once at least. So look, it wouldn't deter me. It hasn't deterred the White Sox from taking guys like this. He's a top of the rotation arm. I don't know where else the White Sox are going to get guys like this if you're not willing to do it like high in the draft.
Yeah. I mean, left-hand side, just power arm with great command and crazy movement and spin rates and carry and all, like all the things that you look for. This is your guy right here. And you know, the one thing that I mentioned, you also mentioned with Jim Callis, when he asked us what our thought was of who we would draft if we had our pick of the litter there per se, was Hagan Smith, because he's left-handed and we've had such a shortage of that. Moving along, we've got Chase Burns out of Wake Forest. He is right-handed, but equally as nasty, with a little bit higher velo. Your thoughts, James?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care. Like, I feel like one of them's going to be gone for sure. They might both be gone. And then I know we had a question on that kind of from Clutch over here, but like, I'm fine with either of them. Like, he kind of put us on the spot, so I chose Hagan Smith because he's left-handed. But I mean, look, if Hagan Smith is gone and Chase Burns is on the board, like, I hope they take Chase Burns, and I think they would. So yeah, it's not, I don't really care. They're both really good. And the White Sox, I don't think will be a team that's afraid to take one of them. I think you get to be close to draft time and we'll have a bunch of draft guests on, and you know, there are some teams that just don't believe in taking pitching this high, regardless of how good the guy might be. So I do not think the White Sox are one of those teams.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't see any reason why they would shy away from a starter like that. They haven't been in the past, so I don't see why they would start now, especially if one of these two arms in particular was available. Doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense why they would try and skip out on that. Both of those guys are obviously pretty special. So next in line, one of the other guys you brought up was Connor Griffin, prep here. And I've got, here he is. He's showing off his arm out in center field. And I mean, say what you want about the umpiring job there, whether he was safe or not. I don't know, but that was still a bullet to third base. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he's the best high school player in the class. I really like him because he's super young. He's like, I don't even think he's going to be 18 on draft day. He reclassified. He's one of the toolsiest players in the class. He can play center field and short. He's got like 100,000 steals in Mississippi. But that's the one issue, right? Is that he plays high school baseball in Mississippi and it's just not very good, right? So I think like if the White Sox were picking seventh or eighth,
that would be. Did you see the swing here?
Yeah.
See, this is my worry about him. Mm-hmm. Is that his balance is really goofy, and obviously that's going to change as he gains some strength and whatever. Yeah. But it's just like a very wonky swing.
So if they were picking seventh or eighth, that would be great because then they'd be in line for number one next year. But I mean, like in this type of class, like he's a no brainer there. But I think at five, the college class is so good that it's really hard to take this type of chance when you have like those college guys on the board.
So, next up in line, Bryce Rainer, from Harvard Westlake, Lucas Giolito, Max Fried, and, Jack Flaherty's joint out there, and, Ethan Katz as well, have Harvard Westlake ties. Great bat speed. I made a comment to you earlier about he looked like a guy who could use a good humbling. Yeah. I'll just go ahead and bring this video up, but, go ahead and, your thoughts on him.
Yeah, I mean, Harvard Westlake, I'm going to assume he's rich, right? So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's a powerhouse school. I don't really like this, like, hitch in his swing, but, you know, apparently he pitches, too, and he's really good. So I just think, like, in a high school class that's not great, I mean, these are some of the top guys. I do think it's, like, you know, after some of these guys last year, like we got our first $9 million bonuses for the first time ever with some of these guys. And look, I don't think these guys are as good, right? But, you know, so you have the same representation. You're going to try to get a bunch of money, right? If you're sitting there with a college hitter or a college guy that you think is going to cost you the full slot at 7.7 and you can get Bryce Rainer for $6 million. I mean, maybe that becomes a possibility. I mean, we have 2 months to talk about it. So, but
yeah,
but I mean, those are the types of things. Like the baseball draft is weird. It's all about signability. It's all about like how many players you can fit into your draft budget. You know, I mean, a guy like George Wolkow goes in the seventh round. I mean, he's not their seventh round talent pick from last year.
Yeah, obviously. No, for sure. So yeah. So, a question actually came up here. And I'll let you go ahead on this. It says, would either high school kid take $100,000 less, might get three top players?
Yeah. I mean, I think way more than that. Like if you're like your bonus pool or your pick at five is worth $7.7 million. I mean, it all depends on where they're going to go. So like if Bryce Rainer thinks he's going, typically the way it works is, like if Bryce Rainer thinks he's going to be the 10th, I want him now actually. But like, if Bryce Rainer thinks he's going to be the 10th pick in the draft, right? Well, then what you do is you take him at five and you offer slightly more than the 10th pick slot, basically, is generally how they do this. And it's a pretty big haircut. I mean, you know, like you're talking maybe $5 million. Like if like he thinks he's going 10 and he's going to make $5 million, maybe you offer him six and he takes it to go fifth overall, and you just save $1.7 million that you can pocket and save later. I mean, you're talking about like a $4 million player then at 43. I mean, teams do this stuff all the time. So, but I just don't know that this year is the year to do that, depending on who's going to be there at five. Cause I will say, like, we've talked, there was a question, from Clutch, where he kind of talked about both pitchers and Griffin. Like, I mean, if both pitchers and Griffin are gone, like that means that Condon and Braden Montgomery and Bazana are like all on the port. So, I mean, I think it gets kind of easier then.
I mean, easier, but more difficult. I mean, what the convictions of not wanting a guy like Bazana.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's, you know, that's a tough pass for me to let Bazana go by with what I've seen from him this year.
What do you mean? Like you'd take him?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, because he's not like he's not one of these little slappy guys, right? Like, I understand not taking Weatherholt for sure.
That's where, you know, I was going. Because
if
that,
it's
yeah.
like similar to, like, who did the A's take last year? Justin, they took Jacob Wilson. And he's just, you know, it's like a hit tool guy. He's like a Madrigal type guy. Like that. Yeah, I have no interest in that. But Bazana. I mean, Bazana is similar to like Matt Shaw, who the Cubs took last year. I mean, Matt Shaw's going to be the Cubs' third baseman in June. You know, I mean,
he's leading in OPS, yeah. I think, right now.
Yeah. So Bazana's a little bit different. Like, I think if the draft were tomorrow, Travis Bazana goes one, because we've kind of talked about Condon. They never take guys that haven't had wood bat like cape success, and Condon hasn't, and he's a friggin' monster. So who knows? Like he might go one, but if he doesn't go one, like I wouldn't be that shocked.
That's fair. Question from Drew Bogues here says, question: with the White Sox having so much pitching in the minors, at what point do teams think they have enough pitching in the farm system that they draft more position players? And this is a great question, especially looking at the White Sox right now. And if you watched this, and you know, if you guys follow us on Twitter and you saw the pitching performances from most of the starting pitching and quite a few of the relief pitchers as well, the White Sox system looks like this, you know, there's at least enough pitching to feed a competent major league staff at some point.
Yeah, and I will say, like, I like my favorite strategy is prep position player in the first round and then college pitching, like, 2, 3, 4, because I think, like, getting your Seth Keeners of the world are, like, valuable, right? Like, I don't love taking high school pitching in that range because it's just, like, so hard to hit on. Like, you know, you can get in, look, like, obviously, like, Sean Burke has been hurt, right? But, like, your Peyton Pollettes and your Jonathan Cannons and like those types of guys. Like, I like that in round two and round three. But this year, if it's Hagen Smith and you want to come back with bat, 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 like that's fine. They do need bats. Like, I agree. I just think they also need top of the rotation starting pitching, because all these guys that we've talked about that we like, many of them, I don't see many aces, right? And even like Drew Thorpe, I think is going to be pretty good for a long time. Like if he's a number three starter, that would be great. They don't have, you know, other than Schultz, but I mean, come on now. Like we, like as good as Noah Schultz is, like it's still a while and it's innings, right? He needs innings. So it's a lot of threes, fours, and fives in the White Sox system.
Yeah, which, you know, Noah Schultz, he looked phenomenal for about 3.5 innings. Well, about 3 innings of his start the other day. You know, the first inning he got strikeout, and I think it was 1-2-3. The second inning was 1-2-3, but I believe it was all like ground outs and a pop out. And then the third, lots of problems with command. I'm not a biomechanist by trade, but something, you know, it looked like he wasn't finishing his pitches all the way through, or he was over pitching. It seemed like he lost his slot, you know. And once he had a trip from a mound visit, he figured it out, struck the 3 guys out in 11 pitches, came out the next inning, struck out 3 guys in 10 pitches, 1 pitch away from an immaculate inning. The guy's special. It's just whether or not he can build the innings base to get there.
Yeah, nobody can hit him. So, like, did you do the math on, like, eventually here, I think he's going to throw 5 or 6 innings, right? But, like, even if he doesn't, 20 starts, it's 80 innings if he's going 4, right? Like, my guess is something in that, like, you know, I had heard from somebody 85 to 100 would be great, but they, you know, if it's 75, they're totally fine with that, you know? So,
yeah.
Because then you can double that next year at Birmingham and get into the 140s. And then at that point, you're talking about just him pitching in the big leagues because he's too good to be in the minors anymore. So, but yeah, I mean, he needs the innings. I'd like to see him throw 5 or 6 at some point. That would be great. He's starting every Saturday. So he'll be pretty much appointment viewing. I mean, obviously, like Ian here will have highlights for everybody all season, but he'll have a lot of people in to see him. Like Winston will have Baseball America and also, you know, like Josh Norris tries to go to all of Schultz's starts. Like there's going to be lots of video on Noah Schultz as the season goes on.
Yeah. You know, like this is my thing with Schultz is, and like what I'm bringing up here is that with the conversation about Tommy John's, which has been a huge conversation the last week with all the big names on Twitter weighing in, the Tommy John thing and the innings correlation, you know, the White Sox have been one of those teams that have been very, very careful about the amount of pitches and the amount of ups and downs that these pitchers have every week. And, you know, it's probably in response to the fact that they had like that stretch with, Dane Dunning and Michael Kopech and just like all those Tommy John injuries that they had within like a span of like 2 years. I assume that this is in reaction to that. But, you know, at some point you have to start getting these guys some innings in order to be able to let them run in Major League Baseball. Do you have any feelings on that at all?
Well, I do think with Schultz specifically, you know, I had talked to somebody really close to him, obviously, like I talked about, and one of the issues was like when he had the shoulder thing at the end of the year, it's just that he wasn't throwing enough like in between starts. And look, we've talked about like the ineptness sometimes of this organization. Like that's nuts to me that somebody wasn't telling him like, hey, this is when you need to throw. But essentially nobody was. And obviously Everett Tiefert left midseason and there were lots of moving parts and stuff, but he essentially just like wasn't throwing enough during the week. And then he was sore because he would then pitch, you know, whatever. So he didn't have that plan. I wonder if the Saturday thing is just like in response to that. Like, this is your schedule every week, whatever that is. Like, I'm not privy to that, right? But if he starts on Saturday, maybe there's work on Monday and then there's like a bullpen Wednesday, Thursday, whatever. And it stays that way every week. And then he throws on Saturday instead of that, like having to change. Cause he is like a 19-year-old kid still. So, or 20, whatever he is. So maybe that's my guess. They think this is the best way to get him like the most innings possible. And then everybody else can just like work around him. Basically, I have no issue with it. It's just, I don't think it's necessary for the other guys.
We had a question here. What do we think about the possibility of Vance Honeycutt at number five? I'm thinking that's probably no shot.
Yeah, I think it's too high. I just, you know, like, he can definitely play center field. He's interesting. It's a lot of strikeouts. It's a lot of strikeouts. I just think there's guys better than him, honestly. I mean, especially when, like, you're talking, like, if you're picking five, and I don't know if people just joined, but, like, you know, you have the two top of the rotation type starters. You have Travis Bezanna, who, like, I think is probably going to go one. And then you have Charlie Condon. Like, literally, if anyone else goes, like, you're guaranteed one of those four guys. So, you know, like, it's just, it's kind of, that's kind of how I feel about it. A lot of people like Braden Montgomery. There's the two high school guys. There's Weatherholt. So I think there's just guys that are better. But look, if I was picking 15 and, like, Honeycutt's on the board, I think you'd be happy with it, you know? So,
yeah. Yeah, which is exactly what Clutch said. That's what I would think, is that he's probably like mid-teens area. I mean, the guy is definitely talented, and he's got some great skill sets, but it's not one of those ones where you're like top five. This guy is a surefire starter in Major League Baseball. This is the kind of guy that you worry about. Is he going to be able to keep bat to ball through the entire minor leagues to get to Major League Baseball? You know,
he's a future Chicago Cub, right in that range, 13, 14. Cause it does, like, dude, it does, like, it's going to be money too, right? Like, I like, even with Cleveland, like, there's a shot that Cleveland likes three guys and they take whoever's the cheapest. And like, Pittsburgh couldn't do that last year because Skeens was so good that they're just like, well, we have to take this guy, right?
Yeah. You couldn't pass that up.
But some years it's like that. Like, it's just like, okay, well, we have a group of three guys, like, the guy that's the cheapest we're going to take. Like, that's going to happen in the top 10 of this draft. Maybe not like right up at the top, but it will for sure.
Yeah, that was one of the big arguments I saw on Twitter, was specifically about Paul Skeens and the fact that he's throwing three innings and like 35, 40 pitches in those three innings, when last year he was throwing 100 pitches, you know, at the very exact same time for, you know, in college. So what is the point of scaling it back that much? Like, what are you really saving? Because these guys that they're doing that with, it's like they go into major, you know, they finally do make it because they're, you know, like you said, they're too good for the minors. But, you know, when you try and extend them in Major League Baseball, that's when they start having arm problems, because they've been used to pitching four or five innings, you know?
Well, and the Pirates, like, are decent right now, and I know they do this a lot in April, but, like, at a certain point, like, it has to be real. Like, they have a lot of good young players. And if it is real, you need Paul Skeets, like, really soon. Like, he needs to be in, like, if the Pirates went on a run, right, and they're in the playoffs, like, Paul Skeens is starting a playoff game for the Pirates. Like, he's a freaking stud. So look, I think we hear within the next few weeks, like, you know, we're going to come on this show and make mention of the fact that Paul Skeens, like, the best pitching prospect in baseball, is in the big leagues. But yeah, it's strange that they're not, like, getting him prepped to actually go five or six innings in Pittsburgh, like, from the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. So nobody's going to dispute that Honeycutt is a very talented dude, and but I just don't think at number five. I think there's no way. Says that reminds him of Joe Adell, and I could see to a point. You know
who does
Vance Honeycutt with Joe Adell.
Well, so the thing is, like, you know, I feel like Joey Dell, like, would have murdered college baseball. Like, he was going to go to Louisville. He would have been
fair awesome. Enough. Yeah.
You know, like, he came out of high school, and look, at a certain point, like, baseball gets hard. For Joey Dell, it was AAA. Like, he cruises through the minors. I mean, there's guys, you've seen it, right, with who's the Wisconsin high schooler that's, like, in Atlanta now, that was Kalanick. Seattle. Yeah, Kalanick. I mean, like, that dude literally didn't struggle. Like, baseball was not hard, like, until the upper minors. And some of these guys just get to the big leagues after never struggling, and you don't know what to do because, like, baseball's never been hard for you. So, yeah, that's – and then – so he mentioned the Royals, too. Like, the Royals' last few picks, or not that one, just, like, the amount of teams that go under slot, Cleveland. Cleveland does it quite often. That's why them picking at one's interesting. I will say the Royals did it where they took Blake Mitchell, eighth overall last year, as a high school catcher out of Texas. That was the White Sox guy. That's who the Sox wanted really bad. And I would have not really known how to feel about that one because I really like the bat, but prep catchers are a super dangerous demo. It just never, ever works.
Yeah, it's like Joe Mack. I was kind of curious how that one was going to work out as well, another prep catcher, you know?
Yeah, they just never catch. Like, some of them make it to the big leagues in other positions, but they never make it as catchers. Yeah, that was very early. That was an eighth overall. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a weird one. But you know, Bobby Witt Jr., who they also took.
Pretty good.
Not bad at baseball. Do you want to talk about any of the performances over the last week in minor league baseball before we head out? Do you have anything in particular?
We should get into it instead of doing draft the whole time. No, I just think the system's interesting. Like, I think that, you know, you look around on Twitter, and I know, like, the beat, like, has a job to do, right? Like, but I think most people are done, like, just, like, hearing about this team. Like, there's stories to cover if people want to cover them. And, look, I don't necessarily want everybody, like, infringing on our territory, but it's, like, this is where the stories are. Like, there's plenty of stuff going on. Like, you posted something today just with, like, how good the Birmingham offense has been, like, the amount of guys that are, you know, like, top 10 in the league.
And
I mean, that offense is good, and they got a ton of pitching. You know, like, the Birmingham team's really good. Jacob Gonzalez has got an 830 OPS in Winston, and his defense looks good. Like, you know, shocker, he played shortstop for Team USA. Like, he's probably a good infielder, you know. Like, I know he doesn't run very well, but he's somehow managed to make plays regardless, you know. And Sammy Zavala is interesting. Montgomery seems like he might be getting it together finally in Charlotte. You know, I think you got a pitching performance every night. And then the lower level guys are starting up soon. You're going to have George Wolkow. And, you know, we find out if the Javier Mogollon hype is real in Arizona. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff going on that's interesting. Good for us, because we don't have to cover this godforsaken big league team.
Oh, man, that makes my life so much happier, not having to think about the actual parent organization. It's so much better not thinking about it. I've said for years now that if I didn't have minor league baseball and I had to watch the White Sox all the time only, I'd stop watching baseball, probably, because they are just absolutely dreadful. There's been so many good pitching performances. I'm in, and ones out of, like, guys that you don't know anything about. Jake Bockenstead today for Kannapolis, 9 strikeouts in 5 innings. And he did allow 5 runs, but only one of them was earned because of 3 errors. This is a guy that nobody knows anything about. You know, nobody has any idea who Jake Bockenstead is except for his parents, you know, and guys like this have been popping up for the White Sox. And it seems like the Mike Shirley drafts are, and the amateur scouting with undrafted free agents, like, they're hitting it out of the park, picking up these guys that are putting numbers up that you wouldn't really expect.
Well, have you looked at, I haven't looked at anything, like, were his stats at SIUE good? Like, was he good? I would imagine he was, you know. Like,
I haven't looked.
Yeah, I haven't either. But I mean, yeah, so he's just, I didn't know who he was. Like, they signed him undrafted. I don't know if he was, like, a Tread Athletics guy. Like, they've had a lot of guys that have worked out, like, out of facilities that they've signed. So, yeah, I mean, he's been solid. I mean, look, Lucas Gordon, I said, was going to carve, like, in low A. I mean, we'll see what he is. I think he's a number 5 starter, probably, like, if he ended up making it. You know, he's kind of similar to Tyler Schweitzer, but Schweitzer's got a little bit better stuff. But I mean, yeah, like, Kannapolis is, like, he's going to carve in Kannapolis. Like, he could probably pitch in Birmingham and, you know, we'd know a little bit more about him. So, the other thing, like, how fun is Riku Nishida? Like, he's not a prospect, I don't think, but, like, but it's still awesome.
That's the thing, is, like, I want to be able to post highlights of him all the time, because he does all sorts of just weird stuff. Like, he gets on base like four times a game, and you won't see it in the box score. And so people look at the box score and they're like, oh yeah, this guy, whatever, he's nothing, because he'll go like 1 for 5. But the thing is he's been on base four times.
Yeah.
Because he's caused errors. You know,
he's like 1 for 4 with 4 runs scored somehow. Like, and you're like, wait,
exactly.
Like, how does this happen?
So weird.
So my favorite thing about Riku Nishita was that, like, when he played in college at Oregon, right?
That's Oregon, where
he played.
Yeah. Yeah.
He would go into the batter's box with a wood bat and an aluminum bat. And then he would like decide like right before he'd go, like what he would use. So he used wood bats in college baseball games, which I didn't even know was allowed.
Yeah, I didn't know either.
Like, it's pretty great though.
Where's this? I would love to talk about Duke Ellis, yeah, because Duke Ellis is one of my favorites. I've been posting highlights of that dude for like 3 years now, and like he's just a stolen, like he's like Vince Coleman in the minor leagues right now. They know that he's going to steal, but it legitimately does not matter. He just takes the base anyway, and he just sits there and he just nods a lot when he gets in and they tag him and he's safe. He's just a lot of fun. He's walking a lot. You know, I'm hoping that the bat progresses a little bit more. We saw a lot more power from him when in Winston. So I'm hoping to see a little bit of that come back to the bat, because that would like bump him along on the road into looking like a guy. And also, in that tweet that I just showed a little bit ago, Terrell Tatum is 5th in the Southern League in OPS. The guy is walking at a ridiculous clip. He's stealing bases. He's hitting home runs. The guy is a menace in AA right now. And that's another one of those guys that's just like, you know, lower round NC State guy that is Jack Leiter's daddy. I'll mention that as well. So many interesting names. And
yeah, Terrell Tatum's good. Terrell Tatum's going to play in the big leagues. He might be a fourth outfielder, but he's going to play in the big leagues for sure. He hits lefty. He walks a ton. It's a great profile. That's like when we had Callis on and Pipeline didn't rank him. Like, I thought that was nuts. Like, he's like a definite top 30 guy for me. Like, he's like, they could trade for 5 guys and I would still have Tatum in the top 30, you know, like, and Baldwin is the other guy. I think there were some questions with us, like, you know, the way we do our rankings, like some of us didn't rank him. I think he'll be on the midseason. I'm pretty sure. Like,
I think you and I are like the only two that did have him on there.
Yeah. Like, he plays everywhere and he's hitting in double. Like, he looks like a future big leaguer too. Like, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's like going to be their second baseman of the future or something. But like, I mean, if you would have told me 5 years ago or 4 years ago that Zach Remillard was playing in the big leagues, like, I would have said, absolutely not. Like, that's an org guy, right? Same thing with Danny Mendick. Brooks Baldwin's way better than those guys, you know? So, like, that's just the type of thing. And if he can play shortstop, that means he can play everywhere. He looks really good. That's another, 12th round find. I love the 11th and 12th round, because that's where you get guys that should have went like 5th or 6th that just like don't. And then you pay them over and add to your draft class. Like, the 11th and 12th rounders are typically like, if you were to stack the class, right? Like, who are your best guys? Like, for the biggest bonuses, like, those guys are usually party, like the top of your draft haul. Him and Jacob Burke is similar.
So we had this conversation via text earlier today. Sergio Santos, the next White Sox manager after Montoyo gets the interim tag, of course. I had made a comment to you earlier today that I like Pat Leland a lot, because he's not afraid to get in umpires' faces. He doesn't have a problem with questioning it. He doesn't have a problem with any of this stuff. But the thing is, I wanted to see him with more talent. But Sergio Santos coming over from the Yankees org, he's managing the Barons, and today, the umpire who has a bad reputation for a couple of years against White Sox teams, Sergio Santos is, respectful, but he goes out there and he gets tossed today after some really brutal calls and just had to stand up for his guys. Tim Elko ended up getting tossed as well. What do you think about the prospect of Sergio Santos being the next guy?
Well, so I've had beat writers bring it up this year, like that they talk about him so highly, and he came in from the outside, buddies of White Sox guy, you know, like, hey, maybe he's the next manager. I mean, look, my thought is like, if they launch Pedro at some point, which like, look, I'm kind of fully expecting. I know we didn't really get into the Joe Colley report, but like, since the Joe Colley report happened, like my guess is that they won't fire him now because like they don't want Joe Colley to win because they hate him so much. But I mean, look, it's clearly like we know where this is headed. Like this is not a thing. Like Pedro Grifol is not going to be the manager of the White Sox in 2025. Now, look, I would prefer they go like hire an actual manager, like, you know, use your ties and hire like Gabe Kapler or somebody. Like that's what I'll be pushing for. But yeah, like I think if it's an internal guy, Santos wouldn't surprise me. Is it weird, like a pitcher, or is it okay because he was like a position player first? Like he does have like a pretty extensive background, but that part's a little strange to me. But he wasn't always a pitcher. He came up as a
shortstop,
player.
Right?
Yeah,
he was a shortstop. Yeah,
yeah, and he just couldn't typical like he couldn't hit at all, and he could throw, so they turned him into a pitcher. You know, so
yeah, that one baffled me as well. I was like, why? Because when I heard that Sergio Santos, I was like, wait, is it the same Sergio Santos? Because I was like, he was a pitcher, and you don't see that very often except for a pitching coach. And then I was like, oh, I guess that's true. He did get switched over to the pitching role later on in his career. So hey, Xavier, how you doing? Clutch asks, any thoughts on Caro's hot start and Ramos's slow start? Ramos not worried about.
Yeah, Ramos will be fine. It's happened before. I'm just glad he's healthy. Like usually he's like not playing because he's not healthy, you know? So yeah, not really worried. I will say though, like he's on the 40 man. So like, you know, I do think like if he could hit, like if he, you know, breaks out of this and looks good, like we could see him, especially if like Moncada's gone, like they're, you know, like he's on the 40 man roster. I don't know how important Charlotte will be. Maybe they think it is, but I mean, eventually here for him to stay on this 40 man, like you're going to see him in Chicago. I don't think he's as expendable as they thought Jose Rodriguez was, obviously, you know, something like that, but you know, we should be able to see him. And then dude, I think Caro's good. Like I think the Angels rushed this guy. I mean, you got a catcher who is getting positive reports behind the plate, and he's probably going to hit 20 homers and he switch hits. Like, he's a top 100 prospect. Like, he's going to be back on, like, the midseason top 100 at most places. He looks really good. He's one of their, you know, I think Montgomery and him are probably, like, the two guys that you're watching.
Yeah, the funny thing was is that he hit his third home run of the series yesterday, and the play-by-play for the Trash Panda said, where did this power surge come from? And I was like, where do you think? He was hitting them all the time in low A, and then they skipped high A and sent straight to double A. Do you think he was just going to figure it out in like 2 months?
God, the it's tough to say anybody's like a worse organization than the White Sox, but the Angels are just, they just do the weirdest stuff because their owner only cares about like double A prospects. So they take all their prospects and send them to double A, whether they're ready or not. Like, my goodness. And even like Caro held his own last year. I mean, he had like a 105 WRC plus. He just didn't have the homers, you know, and if you think he can catch, he's a prospect. Like he's, you know, he's pretty solid.
Yeah. It's been a fun week, you know. The records haven't exactly worked out as well as planned, but you know, overall I think things have been pretty fun this last week. So
you see the we have a Jacob Gonzalez question too.
I did not see.
Yeah, it's right here.
Oh. Where does Jacob Gonzalez fit in the future?
Yeah.
That's a solid question.
I mean, he's got to keep hitting in the minors, obviously, right? But he's the 15th overall pick in the country for a reason. Second base, probably. But, I don't know. I mean, he's a 45 runner. Like, you know, I joked earlier that he's fine at short. Like, I don't know that means you want him playing shortstop in the big leagues. Like, so I'm just going to assume that by the time he got there, they'd have someone better than him and he would play second. But, you know, yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's a lefty. The one thing he's always done is he's always gotten on base and he's always walked. Like, he's played 9 games. He's been on base in all 9 of them. I understood the concerns for sure. And then the concerns after that, because he looked terrible, but he looks totally different right now.
Yeah, 100%. The swing so looks so much better. I don't know if you saw it or not, but he stole third base today. Just saying.
Did they time him with a sundial?
It was a delayed steal, so the catcher had no idea that he was going to leave, and he was probably like, that's Jacob Gonzalez. He's not going to try and steal third. Mm-hmm. And he sure did. So that was kind of funny.
Drew, we're at the end of the line, my friend, but we might have to answer that too. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we might as well. Well, the White Sox being sellers, are there any players who can get a top 200 prospect in a trade?
I think that you can get a top 100 prospect in a trade. Michael Kopech, baby. Kopech. I think if he keeps doing what he's doing, it's too many walks, obviously. But I mean, a year and a half of Kopech, if he's awesome as a closer, like, brings you something nice, I think. Anyways, I think we've seen, like, Soroka's not bringing you anything. You know, you could trade Garrett Crochet and get a bunch of nice stuff.
Yeah, you could trade Luis Robert too.
Garrett Crochet, I think, has only got 2 years of control too. So, you know, as much as I think everybody wants to keep him, it might be 3, but it's not many. So, you know, when you're in their position, it's stuff you have to think about. I would keep him. I don't think they'll do that. I do think they'll spin off some guys. I think Steven Wilson brings back something that we like. I don't know that it's like a top 100 guy, but I mean, you know, like Steven Wilson, I think Steven Wilson and Brebbia, if they're both healthy, bring back something. Kopech brings back a lot. That's probably it though. I don't know why you would, you know, like, you, maybe you trade Tommy Pham for a DSL guy, like, or something, like, if he's good, but I don't know, man.
Speaking of DSL, I actually got a DM message the other day about Eric Hernandez.
Yeah, bad.
So I've seen the numbers in the DSL and in the ACL, and they haven't been great, but he's only 19.
Yeah, he's super young.
Have you heard anything on him at
all?
No,
so the issue was that, like, he was sold as this, like, polished. Oh, no. Yeah, well, he was sold as this polished bat that's going to hit, and then he just, like, doesn't hit ever, you know? And I don't know, man. Usually when you don't hit in the DSL, it's a red flag. Like, just – and, like, guys can figure it out. He was on the preliminary canny roster, and he's not there. So my guess is he's repeating Arizona. But that's what we keep talking about with, like, Javier Mogollon, right? Like, I've heard good reports from, like, backfields. Like, he looks pretty powerful. So, like, he raked at the DSL, right? He could get to canny and never hit and just be nothing. But he did rake in the DSL. So, like, we're, you know what I mean? Like, Eric Hernandez didn't even hit there. So it's kind of,
yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. Benjamin Bailey, he hit in the DSL as well. And everybody talked about, like, the crazy amount of power. And then he got to the ACL, kind of sort of hit. And then went to canny and couldn't hit
anything. Yeah. I mean, it's just, but I mean, look, like, it's really hard. Like, in canny, you're facing guys like Seth Keener and Lucas Gordon. That's why I just talked about, like, those guys being able to carve, because, like, as bad as, like, we looked at the Kannapolis roster, right? And we were, like, a little bit underwhelmed. But, I mean, those are college guys playing against children, like, in low A. So, like, the record might be okay, actually.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that canny's shown so far is the pitching's been pretty stinking good. The problem has been is that there's only a couple of guys on the team that decide to hit every day.
Right.
So we'll see if they can manage to, you know, gel together and start putting some innings together.
I mean, if you played on the backfields in the DSL and then spent a summer in Arizona, right, you didn't see Seth Keener's and Lucas Gordon's. Like, you just didn't. Like, those guys were pitching in power conferences last year. Like, in the, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, there's just, you just have no chance. That's why George Wolkow's not there, because it's not fair to him. Like, he doesn't belong there. Now, hopefully he's great in Arizona, and then maybe, sure, like, you want to end his season in canny if he impresses you. That dude just turned 18. Like, that is a death sentence for a kid like that. It's like what they did to Courtney Hawkins.
Yeah, that's the last place I want George Wolkow to be, is facing ACC and SEC stud pitching every day.
Yeah, like, I mean, even like a guy like look at like Wes Cath, like, and look, maybe he was never going to be good enough, right? I don't know. Like, it's hard. Drafting's hard. Like, this stuff is not easy. But I mean, he couldn't handle upper echelon pitching. He played high school baseball in Arizona.
Yep. It can be hard, you know. We'll see. I'm sure that some of these guys that are at Canny, you know, I mean, and most of them, if you look at the names that are in the lineup, like, nobody knows who Arcee Hernandez is, you know. So yeah. There's going to be a bunch of those guys that are going to move on.
Caden Connor, stand up, baby. Oh yeah, like all these college, you just got all these college guys, you know, and then you have just random DSL guys that have made their way there. I think Burroughs will be there. People have heard of him, but I mean, even like Burroughs wasn't great in Arizona either.
No, yeah, no,
people,
he was not.
And prospect people think he's really good, you know, and the White Sox think he's really good. Well, he's got to hit and prove it, you know?
Yeah, that one baffled me last year. You know, I was expecting him to go to the ACL and at least put up, you know, competent numbers. And he struggled pretty bad last year in the ACL. So, And, you know, but Jeff, AAA Jeff, Jeff Cohen, future Sox guy, he says, asks, you know, Burroughs, what can people expect out of your game? And he said, I'm electric.
Yeah.
So I like the confidence.
Sure, we'll see. I'm sure he was. In Panama, I'm sure he was. So,
yeah. Well, we'll see what he can do, you know, as he comes back. We'll see. You got anything else this week, James?
No, I think that's good. I think, you know, at least we can do this kind of every week. It seems like we're going to have some good stuff to talk about. So that's good. Danny Miller's on the feed. I'm sorry. He won't have much good stuff to talk about. He's, you know, gonna take the arrows for us. So thank you, sir, him and Nick. So we'll be listening.
Yeah, he took the arrow to the knee this week and had knee surgery. Yeah. So he's riding around on a little scooter. So get better there, pal.
He still got it better than Pedro Grifol does. So
Yeah, no, 100%. He doesn't have to deal with that nonsense. Although, you know, that's Pedro's dream job. You know, he's molding it in his shape right
now.
Not
for long. What's I know we're leaving, but what's Pedro's next job?
Double A bench coach.
Yeah. Double A bench coach. Yeah. No, I know.
It's not going to be good. That is, I don't think it's going to be in Major League Baseball after failing this awfully.
Yeah. It's going to be bad.
Yeah. Not good. So, futuresox.net. You can find all of our written content. You can find this in podcast form anywhere that you find your podcast. Also know that if you are listening to this in podcast form, we do stream every Sunday night at 8 p.m. on YouTube and on our Twitch, twitch.tv/FutureSox. We have two other shows that are available on the on YouTube. One after it's recorded, it does not stream. That is the Future Sox Roundup with Elijah Evans and Jeff Cohen, AAA Jeff. And the other one is on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock with our Danny Miller and Nick Morawski, Hot Takes and Heaters. Please like and subscribe here on YouTube. And we thank you guys so much for your time. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at JamesFox917. Drop a like and a subscribe. We appreciate you guys. We will see you guys next week. Have a great night. Thanks.